Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, February 11, 2022. United Nations officials visiting South Sudan warn of a looming conflict in the country.
We see the revitalized agreement as the key tool available to address these issues, and it will be critical for the international community and South Sudan's partners and guarantors, particularly in the region, to pay attention to the situation in the country.
And officials in Jonglei State agree to pay state employees salaries and allowances following Wednesday's protest.
We asked the government of Jonglei State we have met in order to decide how to resolve the problem of the demonstrations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Human rights officials who visited South Sudan for 1 week warned that the country may return to conflict due to slow implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. The UN officials made the remarks in Juba at the end of a six-day visit to the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Yasmin Soka, chair of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, says key aspects of the peace deal in Chapter 2, security arrangements, and in Chapter 5, regarding transitional justice, have remained unimplemented. Soka says all chapters of the deal need to be implemented in tandem with the rest. Restoring peace and stability, ensuring accountability on atrocities committed during the conflicts right from 2013, and conducting free and fair elections as required by the deal are aspects that parties to the deal must implement in letter and spirit, says Soka.
We see the revitalized agreement as the key tool available to address these issues, and it will be critical for the international community and South Sudan's partners and guarantors, particularly in the region, to pay attention to the situation in the country and work to help the realization of peace aspirations held by its people. There is a real risk of going back to conflict.
Soka says their recent visit to South Sudan is part of the Commission's obligation to acquaint itself with the latest human rights situation in the country and to document any rights abuses. The team met various stakeholders, including senior government officials, activists, and citizens who say they are victims of rights abuses in Juba and Yei, respectively. Soka said her commission notes with concern what's called a growing lack of civic space. She says activists fear to speak out publicly on human rights because they fear retaliation by state security operatives.
The shrinking civil space is a cause for grave concern and does not bode well for the future conduct of public consultations envisaged under the revitalized agreement to address constitution making or to establish the Chapter 5 transitional justice institutions.
Soka says defections of armed forces and politicians from one party to another group, which is a violation of the revitalized peace agreement, and a lack of will to effectively implement security arrangements are all worrying threats that have security implications. Bani Afeko, one of the UN Human Rights Commissioners accompanying Soka in South Sudan, says with 12 months remaining to the end of the transitional period, the incomplete implementation of key provisions of the peace deal, which require putting in place a permanent constitution, electoral law, as well as logistics arrangements ahead of conduct of elections, puts the country at what he describes as a tipping point. Afeko says it's high time the parties implement the peace deal's key provisions to avert future conflicts. He emphasized the need to establish institutions and laws that will allow free and fair conduct of elections. He adds that moving ahead with elections without putting in place prerequisites such as constitutional making, electoral laws, and logistics arrangements risk fueling violence.
In South Sudan, this is particularly challenging because the country has been divided acutely over these periods of conflict and the political contestation continues. So if you don't lay proper foundations for holding an election, if you don't have the systems in place, if you don't answer the question of what kind of political system will be established, if you don't have those preparations that ensure that everybody participates fairly and that there is no manipulation of the process or the result, then you're likely to see people rejecting the outcome of elections, whether it's at the level of the constituency or at the level of the leadership.
The officials called on the African Union and the parties to the peace deal to step up work on forming the hybrid court. Chapter 5 of the peace deal mandates that the African Union establish the court for South Sudan, which shall investigate and hold the officials accountable for rights abuses and charge them on war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide committed during the period of the conflict that began in December 2013. The Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or RJMEC, is the body responsible for monitoring implementation of the peace deal. Major General Charles Tai Gitwai is its interim chairperson.
It is true that since it began 2 years ago, implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement during the transition period has been slow. Despite progress made, there have been problems of funding, of trust deficit among the parties, and questions of political will have been raised.
Efforts to reach other signatories to the peace deal for comments were unsuccessful. South Sudan Information Minister and Unity Government spokesperson Michael McQuay denies mistrust among the parties and a lack of political will are contributing to the delays in the implementation of the peace agreement. He calls Soka's statement that South Sudan risks sliding back into conflict unfortunate.
He's wishing that South Sudan slides into crisis because that is what they want. Otherwise, there is no reason why we should slide into clashes or into war again, as long as we understand and know what we are doing. This is a very unfortunate statement.
With 12 months to go before the end of the transitional period, the chair of the peace monitor, Major General Gitwai, said on Thursday that several pieces of legislation are not ratified and state governments are not fully functioning. He also said the forces of the various parties are not unified and the constitution-making process is not progressing as expected. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Authorities in Jonglei State have resolved to pay state civil servants' salaries and allowances. The Jonglei State Information Minister says the decision was reached following an extraordinary Council of Ministers meeting after 9 government employees were injured on Wednesday at a protest in Bor town. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Information Minister Veronica William Deng says the Council of Ministers resolved that Governor Dine Jokchagur's unilateral decision to divert civil servants' allowances be reversed and that civil servants be paid their full salaries with allowances.
We as the government of Jonglei State, we have met in order to decide how to resolve the problem of the demonstrations. We decided that these people are given their money so that the demonstration stop. That is what was resolved in a meeting. We as the current government, we came to work for our people so they deserve to be given their rights. It's their right to receive the allowance.
Minister Ding urged civil servants to call up the strike now that the government has addressed their grievances.
My message to the civil servant is that we as the people and government of Jonglei State, we must hold hands to work together so that we lift our state. We don't want to have any problem in our states, and we as the government will stand with you.
Peter Bure Mabat, the teacher's representative in the Jonglei State Workers' Trade Union, says the state government has yet to notify civil servants about the decision. Mabat says it is good to hear the Council of Ministers reversed the governor's order on civil servants' allowances, but he does not trust what officials have announced because of empty promises they made before.
What has been done by the Council of Ministers the day is still yet received by the workers' trade union officially as a document. It's not the prerogative of the state government to rediscuss it again, simply because presidential order, salaries by 100%, is not a subject for discussion or unilaterally decided by the governor of the state. To reverse or to interfere or alter any decision taken by the president of the republic. That's why civil servant went to the street on Wednesday, protesting against the decision made by the governor.
Mabat says civil servant will resume their demonstrations on Monday unless the Jonglei government gives them a reason to believe their decision to pay the civil servants will stand.
Let the national structure of new salary structure be implemented the way it is. No alteration to be done, to change or to add anything. Because the budget that was brought by the National Ministry of Finance is enough to pay the civil servant without local fund from the state. As you see now, the governor and finance minister misinform the people. And when people are misinformed, they may take a wrong concept, and this is led to misconceptualization of ideas.
At least 9 people were injured after hundreds of protesters clashed with bodyguards of Jonglei governor in Bor town on Thursday. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor, Jonglei State.
Authorities in Sudan and South Sudan say they plan to revive the railway line linking the two countries. Analysts say the railway line will boost trade between Juba and Khartoum. David Monodanga reports for VOA from Juba.
The transportation system in South Sudan consists of road, railway, river, and air transport, the largest being road transport. South Sudan imports goods primarily through the Kenyan port of Mombasa, which accounts for most of the traffic, followed by Port Sudan and Djibouti port. The South Sudan and Sudan railway line has been closed several times in the past because of the conflict between the Sudanese government and Southern Sudanese rebels. First in 1991 during the civil war. The railway was reopened in 2010 but was closed again in 2011 when South Sudan seceded from Sudan. This will be the first time the two countries are reviving the railway line in more than a decade. Some political and economic analysts say reviving it will boost trade between the two countries. Ahmed Morjan, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says railway transport is the most efficient way of transporting large cargo.
You know, South Sudan is a landlocked country, and as we know, most of the merchandise and the goods comes from East Africa through the port of Mombasa. But today, if South Sudan revives the railway line which links Sudan, for instance, from Port Sudan up to where the stops in Awil, it will be important such that large cargo will be moved into South Sudan, as South Sudan being a major importer, at a lower cost than the roads today, and especially as we have seasonal roads mostly.
Morjan says South Sudan should extend the railway line to Juba and to the Kenya and Uganda borders to reap more benefits.
And one expects even not only the railway line to end in Awil, but if it can continue and it may be up to Juba and up to the other border linking the East African zone with that railway line, then South Sudan will actually have a lot of benefit to get from it. Besides that, currently when goods are transported in South Sudan, when they use roads, you know, the issue of multiple taxation. With railway, this can be reduced.
South Sudan's 2011 secession from Sudan prompted Sudan to close the railway line, and it has remained closed since that time. Morjan says the two countries will need to handle insecurity and political instabilities between the two countries, as that will affect the movement of people and goods along the railway. The only segment connecting Sudan's Barbanosa town to South Sudan arrives at Wau and is barely 248 kilometers. According to a report by the South Sudan Infrastructure Action Plan published in 2012, the railway was completed in 1962. Reja Gladys, an economist at the University of Juba, says the railway will help increase exports of goods such as gum arabic, honey, and charcoal, which is being smuggled into Sudan.
It will open ways for importation or exportation of the goods. The National Revenue Authority should focus more on mobilizing or generating a lot of revenue from, you know, exportation of these commodities like charcoal, like honey, like the gum arabic, as well as importing the tariffs and all those. It should be documented.
Edmond Yakani, Executive Director for local NGO, Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says reviving the South Sudan Railway will improve lives in both countries.
I think it's a good initiative. It is a development in the infrastructure. As you're aware, South Sudan is a landlocked country, so we need to have a lot of infrastructure to improve our exit access to the external world. Right, having a railway coming from Sudan to South Sudan will improve mobility of commodities, and that will improve the economy. And that's going to be to human growth and development in the country and improvement citizens' access to income.
Yakari says for the railway line to have a long lifespan, both Sudan and South Sudan must maintain a positive political will to invest in security and maintain the railway line to protect traders and their goods from bandits.
The government of both countries take responsibility to work together with the committees around the railway line to protect the railway line, and ensure that also they invest on safety of passengers through the railway line, because it's passing through a border that there's a lot of community violence taking place.
Yakani says once the project succeeds, the governments of South Sudan and Sudan should concentrate on the security of traders and their goods. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, health experts with the World Health Organization say Africa is ready to control the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do on the weekends?
Over the weekend, I happen to read my books, the novels, and sometimes I go for my leisure time, play pool tables, and watch football because I'm a fan of Arsenal.
Weekends, most of the time I listen to music, I go to the beach, I hang out with my friends. Sometimes I go to the clubs, but mostly, most of my time I'm always with my mom.
It is very good. Weekend is something where you can enjoy your life with either your boyfriends, girlfriends, your friends, and colleagues sometime. So it can be in form of swimming, playing football, and watching football. I'm a great fan of football.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. After 2 years of struggling to contain the deadly spread of COVID-19, the World Health Organization reports that Africa appears to be prepared to control the course of the pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The first case of COVID-19 was detected in Africa on February 14, 2020. Since then, more than 11 million people have been infected on the continent, and more than 242,000 have died. The World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says the pandemic has taken a toll in terms of lives lost and the incalculable damage done to African economies. Despite all this, she says the African people have battled and survived four waves and several variants of the infection. During this trying period, she says Africa has become smarter, faster, and better at responding to each new surge in COVID-19 cases.
As we stand here today, we're finally able to say that if the current trends hold, there is light at the end of the tunnel. As long as we remain vigilant and we act intensively, particularly on vaccination, the continent is on track for controlling the pandemic. It's been an extremely difficult 2 years, but against all odds, Africa is weathering this terrible storm.
Africa has made great progress over the past 2 years in managing COVID-19 cases. WHO reports the number of intensive care unit beds and oxygen production plants has increased. The UN Health Agency also has increased the number of laboratories able to detect COVID-19 from 2 to more than 900 today. Despite these and other improvements, Moeti says vaccination remains the best defense against this deadly disease. She also notes African countries continue to lag behind other countries in inoculating their populations.
While many countries are considering booster shots, 85% of Africans have yet to receive a single shot. To reach the levels of immunity achieved in other parts of the world, vaccine uptake needs to be significantly accelerated across the region and urgently.
Moeti says a steady supply of doses is now reaching Africa, but is not enough to change the situation for the better. Getting those life-saving shots into people's arms, she says, requires faster and more effective vaccine rollouts. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We love to hear your comments about issues in this program. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from a number of you this week about state civil servants and moves to deduct money from their salaries to pay for other things, such as Joel McCare from Jamjang County of the Ruang Administrative Area, who says, "Hello, South Sudan in Focus. State or national governments should not deduct anything from civil servant salaries citing any reason, because they have already contributed by paying personal income tax." Marco Majok says, "I think the deduction of teacher salaries to pay security agents is uncalled for. There is no need to cut from their money. The national government should be responsible for any payment of other parts of the government. I'm encouraging the teachers to take heart and deliver the candidates who are going to sit for their national examinations. Thanks." Joel Philip Kwan in Haimachor Bor in Jonglei State writes, "Hello VOA, I'm appealing to both the governor and deputy governor to consider their decision to revoke what is called taking allowances from the salaries of civil servants of Jonglei State employees. The decision would not be welcomed by the civil servants of Jonglei State, and I'm also appealing to the national government and president of the republic to intervene for this issue to be resolved amicably and in good faith, without escalating further." Mading Malwal Alwang from Malakal Town says, "Leaderships matter. The work of Governor Rin Twain Mabor in Lake State makes this abundantly clear. When competent individuals occupy positions of leadership, society thrives and people enjoy peace. What Governor Rin is doing by cracking down on the criminal in Lake State is what we want to see in South Sudan. Now it's obvious where incompetence lies." Samuel Remo in Yei writes, "Hi John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. The ruling of the International Court for Compensation of Damages incurred by Ugandan government in eastern Congo was unfair. The $325 million is not enough to compensate for losses incurred in Congo. The Congolese government should reject this amount because there was no contact held between the Ugandan government and Congolese authorities before they should extract Congolese wealth." Pam Bileu Deng Luat in Juba's IDP camp says, "Hello VOA, I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to link with you. I am inspired by your newscast. I have been a VOA listener for many years." Ayen Yak Dao in Sharikat Juba says, "The Upper Nile and Jonglei states should have a joint operation to monitor the river transport. Otherwise, attacking and looting will be imminent along the Nile." Saber Isaac Hamis in Yambio of Western Equatoria State says, "Hello South Sudan in Focus. The restoration of the Azande Kingdom after 117 years is a day to celebrate and remember by all the Azande community. I would love to see the kingdom free from any politics because our politicians are known for hijacking set-up organizations in South Sudan. Thanks." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Juba says, "Tanza, I was so excited to see the Azande King crowned yesterday. It was a great moment, not only to the Azande, but the entire family." Mandela Mandela from Juba says, "Good evening, guys. I love the speech of the governor, His Excellency Emmanuel Adil. It was powerful and very encouraging during the swearing-in of members of parliament. May God bless you." John from Bor says, "Fighting between SPLM-AIO is the indication that they have failed with their mission and vision of bringing peace to the country. Yet Dr. Machar is under house arrest and soon Simon Garwich will also be under house arrest." John Makway Amom from St. Andrew Cathedral Bor Town in Jonglei State writes, "It is a shame for the government of Jonglei State to kill its own people. God help your people from wild animals." Mal Adao Mal in Bor Town says, "Hello John and Nabil. South Sudan was recently ranked as the world's most corrupt country. It's absurd that our jungle is an epicenter for corruption. Our state government is uniquely full of sycophants, and I urge the governor to halt consumption of civil servants' money, and their guards should be trained on how to use their guns. There was no call for soldiers to use live bullets to dispatch peaceful protesters. And finally, James Ray Majok from Unity State's Bentiu Town says, the South Sudan government should address insecurity across the Upper Nile region between forces under Simon Garrigue-Doual and SPLA-IO movement under Riek Machar, plus SSPDF military army under President Salva Kiir. Fighting has broken out in Mirmir SPLA-IO barrack and in the Upper Nile region. These daily clashes between warring parties will make the revitalized peace implementation not to be in a good position to be trusted by the people of South Sudan. The views reflected here do not represent the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing what you think. Keep those comments coming.
Send your brief message and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Wenga Mambo. Listening to Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Wenga Mambo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.